Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the economic affairs think tank in Brussels. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. I'm a senior fellow here at Bruegel and the Europe columnist for Reuters Breaking Views. I am happy to be joined today by my fellow senior fellow, Georg Zachmann, and Christian Zinglerson from ACER, which is the European Union Agency for the Cooperation of Energy Regulators. We are going to talk about Georg's very exciting, very ambitious plan for fixing European electricity markets, for how we can have a better or possibly even single market for electricity. Georg has written a paper that you can find on our website. There was an event at Bruegel on February the 28th, also recording available on our website. And this podcast will be a great introduction to the topic, the concepts, and where we're going for those of you coming to this fresh. Georg has really outlined the issues that Europe faces making sure that all of its member states have reliable energy supply that ideally in the future will have fewer fossil fuel emissions and be more reliable. His ideas for how to fix it come broadly in three buckets. There's sort of a status quo bucket where you take the current system and make it better, better coordinated with better data, better transparency. There is a middle idea where countries explicitly acknowledge that what they do domestically will have an effect on other countries. And I find this to be such a game changer for how Europe can work together within the sovereignty framework that people are so comfortable with. And then, of course, there's the third option of a true single market with potentially joint funding, joint regulation, and all of these other things, which may be something that Europe will want to consider in the future. Georg, tell us about the research you did, the way you quantified how this looks, and how you came to this conclusion that cross-border really interaction is an improvement and helps people protect their sovereignty and not weaken it.
Hi, Rebecca. Great to be here today. The paper is co-authored by six people from different European member states, each of them experts, often very close to their national energy policy making. So we hope it carries a bit of weight, not only for Brussels, but also beyond. And what we do in the paper, as you said, is we try to essentially call for more integration by highlighting the huge benefits that European consumers and industry can get from more integration, and also in terms of security of the system, which is an increasing issue. The idea here is not in the paper to come up with super concrete proposals on what needs to be done, because that is going to be complicated, and I hope we can speak about that today. But it is about really making the case that today, policymakers, high-level policymakers, should really start a discussion on this topic, because the time is now to get the European electricity system running for the transition and for the relatively difficult time of the massive investments that we are needing ahead. So what we are essentially arguing, and I think the best thing is to have a look into the paper and to the individual arguments, is that if we integrate the system more, we can save a lot in terms of fossil fuels that are still in the system. So if the wind is blowing in one country, we can switch off the gas plants in another country, and that can go up to 20% of the fossil fuels being saved, including the emissions that this would produce. And the bigger benefits even are in terms of investment. So if you need backup investments, but you can share them among countries, you need less power plants to be built. And as we are having a huge investment wave ahead of us, every 10% of power plant capacity we build less will relieve the system, because we don't have the workers, we don't have the engineers, and we don't have the materials. So it's important to be as efficient as possible on that side. If we furthermore also manage to put the renewables to their best use, or to put the wind turbines to where the wind is and the PV panels to where the sun is, then additionally, we can save a lot of those wind turbines and solar panels, because each of them will produce more. Now, all this techno-economic argument, as we call them, taken together, would already justify doing more together. We currently are not doing that enough. Beyond this, we also have what we call more institutional or managerial benefits, which is if you have a bigger market, you significantly reduce the capital cost because people know that there is a big market. And if they invest, there is liquidity and there is the knowledge that it's not so easy to change this big market because it's institutionally locked in. And therefore, investors demand much lower capital cost. And capital cost is the name of the game for the transition because backup power plants, renewables, all of that is essentially fixed capital. And if we reduce only by one percentage point the interest rate or the capital cost here, that is going to be a huge benefit. With all that taken together, we think there is a great case for more integration. We then discuss in the paper, of course, what is holding it back and how we can overcome that. But maybe we can come to that later.
Thank you so much for that overview. Christian, how do your members think about this problem? Obviously, they need to think about their local citizens and their local constituents. They need to think about national security. They need to think about just practicalities. We've seen such huge shifts in the European energy landscape over the last 2 years since Russia invaded Ukraine, and there was this big swing away from Russian-provided gas. Where do you start out with coming to Georg's paper, and what do you take away from it?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I like the paper a lot. I also had the privilege to give some comments in earlier versions, etc. I think it brings out well many of these benefits, which would come with increased integration of electricity markets. My members, so to speak, we are the EU's energy regulatory agency. So in our grouping, if you will, we have 27 national regulatory authorities on energy, and we do all kinds of stuff. You know, we discuss things and adopt decisions and whatnot. In terms of this overall issue, I think it's part of regulatory DNA to care a lot about efficiency for the benefit of all things equal, lower bills for consumers, whether households or industry. So there is a positive inclination towards doing more together where that increases efficiency without sacrificing security. That said, different regulatory authorities have different preferences. They come from different regulatory traditions, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that is sort of the common denominator. More broadly, what I would say, in addition to the many benefits which Gio has outlined and which are well developed in the paper, one of the reasons why I think it's particularly timely now, looking ahead, is this investment wave that Gio has been talking about, absolutely. But also looking immediately back, we had a double energy supply shock type crisis, and you can argue whether we're fully out of it, et cetera, but we're certainly significantly better off than a year ago or more. I think that's a consensus view. It is a double energy supply shock because, of course, we had a very significant gas supply shock by virtue of Russia almost fully shutting off the pipes. But we also had a somewhat less talked about electricity supply shock by virtue of very low hydro production and significant corrosion problems in the French nuclear fleet. And the French nuclear fleet is roughly half of the nameplate capacity for nuclear in Europe, so that's very significant. So at times during the extraordinarily high gas price season, we had a completely counterintuitive phenomenon in Europe, namely that you saw a rise in gas-fired generation. How was that possible? That is because you had nothing left to generate to meet demand, even though demand was suppressed. So it was a double energy supply shock. And the reason why I mention it is because while there were, let's say, some sensitive debates here and there, by and large, we got through the energy crisis together with not significant blocks of gas flows or electricity flows between countries. And for some jurisdictions in Europe, that was actually existentialist necessary to A, either keep the lights on or B, keep the homes warm, etc. Because of that, in addition to what you said, Georg, about what we see ahead and the opportunity which arises now, and of course also the opportunity cost of not doing it, also, when we look immediately backwards, there was a huge resilience benefit in having our integrated energy market. So both for electricity and gas, the paper focuses predominantly on electricity. And that is also part of the equation. I think you coined it well. You know, if Europe wants greater energy independence, it will probably need to rely on greater interdependence, which is a catchy phrase. And it's also true. So that is also part of the picture, I think, when you look at the geopolitical environment that the European Union finds itself in, or Europe more broadly finds itself in. Yes, there is a particular situation towards the east, yes, but there's also a competitiveness issue vis-a-vis North America and Asia, not just China, but, you know, emerging Asia and whatnot. And so we, as a relatively low natural resource continent, at least compared to some other parts of the globe, we have to leverage the assets that we have. And one of them is actually our integrated energy markets, which are unprecedented in global scope in terms of how integrated they are. So that's an asset. Of course, it's a man-made asset, right? It's not a resource asset that you find in the ground or something, but it is a genuine asset given where our energy system is evolving towards.
Maybe I can add some forward-looking thought on that. So Christian spoke a bit about the past as an indicator of how important integrated markets are. But looking forward, what we will have to face is that fossil fuels will be scarce, expensive. We don't want to use them because of our decarbonization ambition. And if we move away from fossil fuels, the alternative to that is clean fuels. And clean fuels are going to be much more difficult to bring into Europe. So if you want to bring electricity into Europe from the outside, that is going to be quite expensive because the transmission links are hard to build and the opportunities are not that great. If you want to bring hydrogen, you have to go a very long way and you have to use ships and potentially liquefaction of that. It is going to be a very different world from the world we are in today, where essentially 60-70% of our energy is imported into Europe, to a world where most of the energy is being domestically produced and is largely going to be domestically produced as electricity. So if we don't get our electricity system right, then we don't get our energy supply of the future right. So we are switching from a world of fossil imports to a world of domestic electricity production. At least that's my conviction. And this means that with the new world ahead, where we have a lot of flexibility on the demand side, but much less flexibility on the supply side, we need to design a system that is capable to, across borders, optimize this new system in a sensible way. Otherwise, we are going to have to invest every country much more than probably the population is willing to shoulder.
That was a really interesting point that you've been making in your various venues about how we've gotten used to how easy it is to put oil or gas onto a ship or some other conveyance and cart it around from place to place. And on the one hand, to have an interconnected electricity market means being able to transmit the electricity from place to place, but in a very different way than we're used to with these older fossil fuels. What do you see as the future mix of fossil fuel plants, renewables, nuclear? What's that going to look like for Europe, or what could it look like?
I mean, we have some indication on what we currently think the system is going to look like. So there is the 2040 impact assessment of the European Commission for these 2040 decarbonization targets. There are some long-term scenarios by the IEA and by different governments. And typically what you get is a significant increase in electricity production. So almost typically a doubling in the next two decades of electricity production. Most of it is going to be renewables plus nuclear. Here, member states have strongly different views on what this mix of nuclear and renewables is, but it's pretty clear that there will be a lot of renewables, and depending on the country, it's also some nuclear. And then there needs to be the backup for the system when the demand is high because it's cold and all the heat pumps are running and the wind is not there and the sun is not there. You need to make sure that you can heat the homes and then still run the industry. And for this backup, I think we are still considering what the best option is. That's at least my view. Germany seems to be betting on gas peakers that are possibly also running on hydrogen. We can use more integrated markets. We can use hydropower to some degree, but it's not that much available. We can also use fossil plants if we manage to pump the CO2 underground, so with CCS, or we can burn biofuels. So there are a few options still available for these relatively few hours of the year where you would want to have electricity but cannot easily get it from your baseload sources. And for that, we need to talk to each other across borders, because if every country is building up a backup system that is ready to completely back up this national system, we are going to overbuild this backup system by maybe 20%, which is going to be pretty expensive because it's going to be a large part of the capital expenses of the new system.
Oh my gosh, yes. Would you see nuclear? Is the EU going to start building big new nuclear power plants again, or only these small reactors that the Commission is looking into developing an industry for? How do you see that happening?
Yeah, on nuclear, I mean, we are still early days on the nuclear renaissance. We have been talking about this for quite a while, and the commercial case of the small modular reactors so far is not yet there. for big reactors, I think we understand how to build them, but we haven't managed to build them in a sensible cost framework in Europe in the past 3 decades. So there are significant risks on betting on nuclear. One of the big challenges that I would see for nuclear is that if you take today the decision to build one, you might get one in 15 years, but nobody knows what the demand and supply in 15 years is. And there is no upside for nuclear. As soon as there is very high demand in 15 years, 3 years before the nuclear plant opens, a lot of wind turbines and solar panels will be installed and eat up this upside. While there might be significant downsides, you open your nuclear plant and you're faced with very little demand. So there is a bit in a Stackelberg investment competition game. You have the problem of that you have these long lead times for nuclear. Still, there might be good reasons for some country for industrial competitiveness, military purposes, and maybe you're hoping to crack the nut of the cost to go into that direction. But it's certainly not an easy proposition to make on a single sheet of paper to say that nuclear is the future.
Christian, what do you make of the internal conflict over this? Denmark, for example, was one of the countries trying to keep nuclear power out of the green taxonomy, but also has some promising nuclear startups. So to me, that was when I saw that was a good example of the debates within the EU of, on the one hand, no fossil fuel emissions. On the other hand, people are very uneasy with this. Is there any consensus among your members?
So I would say, generally speaking, this is a question that most national regulators would tend to stay out of because it's quite political. I think most regulators, and certainly Acer included, would say it's good to keep a relatively prominent role for the market because that takes risks away from governments and therefore also taxpayers and therefore also consumers, to those who have genuine skin in the game and have, you know, professional portfolio, project management, whatever. So for that reason, I think I would agree with Georg. I think it looks somewhat different in China, but at least in Europe, nuclear build-out has proved relatively costly and is often delayed. Those two things are quite linked. And very often there is a very significant government portion of sharing of the risk in those types of projects that may remain. But that said, I think regulators would want to be seen as agnostic on these types of choices, etc. I think most would say, let's not forget that there is some role for the market in delivering certain solutions so governments and ultimately taxpayers slash consumers don't take all the risk. But that's basically it. My own view, which is a personal view, is I think the name of the game going forward for Europe, if one wants to do more together, is to be ultimately more pragmatic and not so judgmental on other countries' choices, by which I certainly don't mean not to coordinate choices and decisions. This was Georg's point in the beginning. That will be much more necessary. And I do hope the political will to do it is there, but not to be judgmental on the specific choices as such, because countries do have different traditions and preferences, and ultimately they face their own population at the ballot box, etc. And my own take a bit, but this is an impression I have, which I can't, you know, back up with stats or anything, is that after the energy crisis, these very significant, let's say, ideological divisions have subdued a bit. Haven't gone away, but they are slightly less pronounced, which I think is a good thing.
Thank you for that. When we come back, we'll talk more about the investment and funding outlook. Welcome back. Georg, how do you see the funding for this working out? So far, it's been very national. And one of the points you've made is that we see an increase in national funding sort of taking over from some of the more cross-border international efforts that we had before the Ukraine-related energy crisis. At the same time, we've seen the European Commission go hard on Repower EU. We've heard talk of future energy and climate funds. We've had other snags, like the one in Germany over their climate fund. Talk to us about the funding outlook, where we stand, what can be done.
It's In Europe, we pride ourselves of having liberalized electricity markets. And the idea of these liberalized markets was that the market is going to finance the corresponding generation assets. And the hope was that when we create nicely functioning cross-border short-term markets, then these signals will lead to financial futures products. And then if I want to build a gas-fired power plant or a wind turbine, I look into the futures and I lock in a certain price for the future. And then I build my thing and I'm relatively risk-free in terms of the delivery, at least on the financial side. And that has not materialized for maybe two main reasons. One reason is we didn't get these long-term market signals. And a linked reason was that member states were not confident in the market to deliver those signals and hence provided their own investment signals for certain technologies in certain places, in certain amounts. And a case in point are capacity mechanisms in some countries, payments for reserves, also renewable subsidies, but also the most recent discussion on German power plant strategy that was supposed to be essentially auctioned off to specific power plants and investment support. Now, what that leads to is that in the end, governments decide which types of power plants they want, typically how much of them, and sometimes even where. And that is then taken out of the market, which means that the market price itself does not reflect any scarcity anymore, because the scarcity is then taken care of largely by the investment signals. And it's a sort of a negative cycle in which market participants expect now the government to underwrite their risk, because if they don't underwrite the risk, they invest based on a market signal. Then later on, the government comes and provides some support scheme. The market price goes down and those that were not covered before by the state are losing money. And therefore, you essentially get a self-fulfilling prophecy that everybody now seeks for some sort of investment support mechanism through these different tools that are available. Challenge here, and that's one of the large points of my thinking on this, is that we have these instruments, we will not get them away, but we do not plan them properly. It's essentially based on lobbying activities in the member states' capitals, and there is no market. Therefore, I just do not see how we get this efficient system that is so complex being put together, because we don't do European planning on what would be good. We don't do a European market or even a national market to decide on what would be good. And therefore, we are kind of up in the air and everybody is waking up on a Friday afternoon saying, okay, we might need 10 gigawatt of hydrogen-ready gas-fired power plants, and then they are auctioned off and being built. And I just cannot see how that would lead to anything that is remotely cost-efficient. That's why with the paper, there's an implicit strong call for policymakers to get their act together and try to find a way to coordinate this build out of the new electricity system.
Maybe I can compliment.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So I agree with what Georg said. I think there's at least two things. And first and foremost is probably this notion of, let's say, more enhanced coordination structures. Coordination can mean many different things to different people, right? It's plan economic Soviet, or is it just that you talk to each other? There's all kinds of shades of gray in between. But some coordination structures, planning, maybe also then instruments which are more shared, etc. That's one. And the second, which I think will be necessary, maybe after some considerable mistakes have been made and internalized first, who knows, is to not extricate oneself fully from this somewhat vicious cycle that Georg was pointing to. I don't think that's realistic. We have an accelerated transition, supply side and demand side interventions. A lot of that will be government driven. Market participants are not fully comfortable with taking all the risk. So it's not going to extricate completely, but figuring out jointly what is the appropriate role of market signals. How do we convey broader system needs outside of a central planner's corner office? So those are the two things. And I suspect it may be easier to start upon the first coordination, and then maybe we can use those processes to figure out jointly what is the appropriate role of the market. And we probably need to extricate ourselves a bit from some of the current stuff going on.
Maybe just one, in my view, critical point is, if we continue to go down this, in my view, slippery slope of more state intervention into the system, in the end of the day, it's all going to be paid by the taxpayer. So we will get into a system where essentially nobody believes anymore in market signals and wants that this stuff is being channeled through some form of state guarantee slash the budget of the state. And that is going to be super expensive. We are talking here of easily 1% of GDP every year that is going to be paid into investments into the electricity system. And I do not see how that is going to work. And I would hope that ministers of finance find this proposition of a more European market quite attractive, because it allows them to leave that to the private sector to run the investments here and not to kind of silently take over the energy sector with all the challenges that it will imply.
Just on this one, Guido took the words out of my mouth a bit in a benign way. No, that's good. Indeed, I think it's very good that you have led this effort, Guido, on behalf of Bruegel with these other energy economists spanning Europe, because I think Bruegel is, all things equal, associated with being an economic policy think tank, obviously branching out in all sectors of the economy, goes without saying. I think that is super good, because one of the experiences I've had over the last couple of years, maybe 2.5 years, is we have been called upon to speak to, let's say, at least for us, unusual constituents like European Central Bank, other national central banks, finance ministers, etc. Obviously, that was in the course of an energy crisis where one needed to discuss a bit what's going on and what's the near-term outlook, etc. And of course, we had some views on that. Others would have other views. That's what it is. But my point is more exactly for the reason that Gil was saying, and this enormous investment wave ahead of us and the likely bumpy, volatile ride we will have ahead. More volatility in markets, a lot of supply side intervention, demand side interventions, which may not prove to be perfectly calibrated. There will be bumps and shocks. And that has risks also for those who control budgets and have a budgetary responsibility. Monetary policymaking will be more difficult, etc. So that's why I think it's important that they read the brief, or, you know, more specifically, you know, they get in on it. This is a societally horizontal trajectory we're on, and it will have very significant implications way beyond energy. And that needs to be, yeah, well understood in more types of government offices than, say, 10 years ago, where it was more sectoral, no? Now it's really cross-governmental. So this needs to be a conversation where all those who have equity, so to speak, political equity, need to engage. And hopefully this brief will help.
I'm really struck, Georg, by what you said, that if every country individually built its own backup system, that the system would be at least 20% oversupplied. Because then you have a question of, do we run all that supply anyway and just see artificially low energy prices that taxpayers pay for in the back door by repaying all of the construction subsidies? Or do we see a boom bust situation? I mean, if that's our kind of worst case scenario, that everybody goes it alone and overinvests, it seems like it could really mess up the economies as well as whatever remains of the market.
Can I come in with an anecdote before Georg can say something more pertinent than me? I used to work in the Danish government quite some time ago, and I had a counterpart in another Scandinavian country. So he was also responsible for energy policy as I was, and he actually came from agriculture, where he led that country's, as a civil servant, agricultural policy. And he was a fun guy, so he sometimes liked to joke that this was the perfect background to come into energy policy, because his lesson from agriculture was, once you start subsidizing a pig, you need to subsidize a cow. And then you will realize you need to subsidize a chicken, after which you realize you need to subsidize a horse, after which, etc. So this was the joke. But of course, any joke has an element of potential truth in it, which is this subsidy cycle. Because if it's true, you invest in backup capacity, which participates in the market, and not all do, but those that do, they will, of course, depress price, as you rightly put. And maybe some other participants will be somewhat dissatisfied with that and will wish for compensation. And you could even say, you know, talk of the town is flexibility, demand response, asset storage, whatever. Right. Well, if they can't earn enough market revenue, they will probably come to the government, directly or indirectly, to ask for supplements. So that's your chicken and your cow and your horse, right? So that's why I was trying to say that we need to find a way to settle on the appropriate role of the market. It won't be the full role, but hopefully it should not be zero role, because I don't think the common agricultural policy across the EU is the perfect benchmark for future energy policy of the EU.
But it's difficult to add something, maybe a bit of an academic disclaimer on the paper and the 20% I mentioned. We found it rather difficult to do the quantifications. What we did in the paper was essentially lining out quona scenarios of fully integrated and not integrated markets. And there then you get these very substantial savings on individual items. Then in principle, you would have to run a big model to all kind of, because they all interact, to pull them together and to see what the eventual savings are. So given that we put in all this work on understanding the individual elements, there is still a certain element of gut feeling on my end that this 20% is the right order of magnitude to talk about, but I cannot back that up with a kind of huge machine of quantification. So that is the rather academic disclaimer on this number. But what I find sometimes even more important than these techno-economic benefits that are somewhat more easy to understand if you overbuild the system, then you have too much stuff standing around, is really the second part of the benefits in terms of capital cost savings. Because my take is that here is really a lot to be gained if we have strong competition between players, make sure that the cheapest options are typically chosen, that we don't have this very bureaucratic approach to find solutions, and that we get in all the creativity to tap into the demand side solutions, as well as all sorts of storage and network and supply side solutions, if we manage to set up a properly working system. And if we don't do that, as Christian was alluding to with this agricultural example, I can fully subscribe to that. I think that is what is my biggest worry on the energy front, that we are trying to shape a block of wood into some very nice thing, but we only have very, very rough tools to do so. And that is going to look very ugly in the end.
That is a great analogy for those of us who have trouble really understanding the scale of electricity generation and money that's at stake here. I mean, really just visualizing we have this big task and we don't have precise tools for managing it that granularly. Oh, when we come back, we'll talk about some of the good news, opportunities and possibilities for the EU. So as we wrap up this conversation, what's the best case scenario? What are things that are practical that we could do? We probably can't have a completely coordinated single market with a wonderfully smooth and seamless joint budget, but there are things that are possible. How do you see those, Christian?
I think we could start by recognizing the fact that energy policies, whilst of course national, have effects on others, and therefore there is a strong case for coordinating them, not delegating decision-making authority per se to neighboring countries, but coordinating proper and taking account of developments in neighboring countries for one's own sovereign decisions. Second, I think there is a case for, let's say, aggregating the bigger picture, whether at continental scale or regional scale, in terms of informing such decisions on what might be needed or less needed. Again, ultimately, the decision is probably going to remain national, but at least it'll be significantly more informed by a more coordinated and planning effort. Then I think we need to further optimize, or maybe regionally optimize, system operation, because there needs to be an understanding that such a more integrated system needs to be operated with regional as opposed to national optimization in mind. That sounds a bit technical, I know. But behind the technical elements, which we can elaborate a bit further if you want, is of course this a bit fluffy notion of trust. So if we have a significantly more integrated system, per all the many benefits that Georg was outlining in the beginning and which are well developed in the paper, then we will have a system where some will be structural exporters and some will be structural importers to a significantly greater degree than today. That has a number of benefits, yes, but it also requires faith of both parties that that system will hold. And that faith is built or broken in crisis time, not in peacetime. Anyone can have a nice fancy speech in peacetime. It's in crisis times when you know who your friends are, right? So there needs to be trust here, and some of that trust is around enforcement, sanctioning, you know, walk softly but carry the big stick and all that. But there's also something about system operation. One needs to make sure that there is a genuine regional approach to system operation. Whether it's captured regionally, institutionally or not, it's a different story, but there needs to be faith in that. So it's political faith, system operation faith, et cetera, and regulatory oversight faith, et cetera. But this, yeah, inherently bit fuzzy notion of trust is really important, and trust comes will come in many sizes and shapes. So there is a number of elements there, the coordination, the planning, the informing decisions by more top-down system operation, and probably also cost sharing. We'll need to share costs across in a significantly more nuanced way than we do today, where basically, if you want a bumper sticker version of it, is costs lie where they fall. So it's quite territorial, unless someone else picks up the tab. That will need to change in the future, I think.
So if you see all the big and great benefits that you can get from an integrated market, you would wonder, why have we not moved faster and further already by now? I mean, we have 30 years of electricity market reform attempts by now, and we have achieved a significant degree of optimization on the short-term markets, but not on this investment side. And I would highlight three issues that we need to solve, very much echoing what Christian said. So we need to solve some form of distributional consequences. So if we connect stronger together, it might mean that some actors benefit less than others, significantly less, and they might want to get compensated for moving ahead. We need to resolve the issues on trust. So as Christian said, policymakers need to be sure that in case of a crisis, they can ensure their population that the energy is there and that it's not sucked away by neighboring countries, even so they dearly need it at home. So there needs to be the trust that the system is crisis-proof. And finally, there is the issue of some form of sovereignty. So member states want to shape some elements in the electricity system, be it excluding certain technologies in their country, maybe particularly favoring certain technologies that they need for national reasons, or shaping some elements on the distributional side of electricity prices. And the question is then, how do we square that with an integrated market? And in my thinking, that's the more personal at the moment, so not yet what the authors of the paper brought together. I see essentially three stages of integration that one can think of. So we can try to improve the current system, and we should definitely do it because that's, for me, a rather no-regret option. So enforcement is clear. In my view, we need a European Energy Agency to provide the information to policymakers about what's happening in their country and in neighboring countries to just be able to optimize their systems to what is already known in a relatively neutral way, and also take a bit the information monopoly away from some of the monopoly actors that are currently playing this political influence game. We could do more coordination already with tools such as the National Energy and Climate Plan. So we member states should talk about those together and then try to identify whether there are some low-hanging fruits for cooperation and not duplicating things that don't need to be duplicated. We have market instruments that look very similar across borders, and they can probably be more harmonized. So we are now talking about contracts for difference for renewables support, and I think it would make a lot of sense to make them implicitly tradable or at least comparable by harmonizing the way in which they are designed. And building more transmission lines is almost always the right thing to do and to push for, because the hardware needs to be there, otherwise you cannot integrate the markets. And for that, some degree of cost sharing we have in very kind of immature tools, but that can be stepped up. So that's the first block of things. Go for it. And the second step is things that would already be a step change. So it would be kind of a market 1.5. Here, we would have those credible commitments by member states to not do things that harm the others, at least not without compensating and consulting them. And that is going to be important for trust building and not beggarly neighbor policies of I build my thing next to your border and I will flood your market with this stuff in good times and in bad times I will use it for myself. I think we need to talk about those things and have some commitment of not doing that. We could, in that version, very easily envisage a stronger harmonization of products, including for security of supply, aka capacity mechanisms, and ideally go for joint markets on that. So if we can have a European capacity mechanism, that would be a strong step, of course, but one that in principle is conceivable. If we go there, we then, however, need to do something about the distributional effects. So then we really need some sort of joint funding mechanism. For example, on grid infrastructure would be quite straightforward because it would be a win-win for you. You get the grid infrastructure and you have some redistribution involved in it. And then comes the vision version of what we could achieve if you're really daring. And there I would see a really new start, say, okay, we have a European regulator that is a real regulator that can take decisions, not on national regulators, but on the system itself. And we have joint system operation, so where there's some system operator that runs the system, makes sure that it's run efficiently, that the transmission lines are properly used as much as possible, and that if the wind is blowing in southern Portugal, then maybe in Poland the batteries are filled. And that requires a substantial degree of seizing of national sovereignty as it is perceived today. I think it can be safeguarded with two particular tools. I think it's not impossible to get there, but it's early days to talk about it.
That is such a great summary of the takeaways in this paper. And listeners, if you've been drawn into this topic, highly recommend you go to our website, Bruegel.org, to find the paper itself, all the co-authors and all of their backgrounds. Also, the wonderful event that Georg and Christian did with the European Commission and also the Belgian Energy Minister. You can find all of that at Bruegel.org. You can find all of our podcasts on all of your podcast channels. This has been The Sound of Economics. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie, here with Georg Zachman and Christian Zinglerson, and we hope to see you next time. Thanks.